Very much.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Chris. We're two Chris's, aren't we? We better not use each other's names. We'll be both answering each other's questions otherwise.
I think your voice might be slightly better than what mine is, to be perfectly honest with you. Is it nice to be back in Bradford?
Fantastic. My mum lives here anyway, you know, and I've got other relatives and lots of friends. So, yeah, it's lovely. And I can't wait to play because I'm hoping a lot of people I haven't seen for a long time will come down to the show. And I get to catch up with some people, you know, because sometimes you don't, when you're not around. And I travel a lot, you know, because with my own band, I travel all over the place. I left Bradford in the 80s, around about the same time as I left Smokey, actually. I left Smokey in 86, and I moved to the Isle of Man about the same time.
Okay.
But I've been backwards and forwards ever since to see people and that, but and then I travel, and I've just come back from Germany a couple of days ago, and I'm working around, but it's nice to be home, and it's nice to be playing in the UK in general, but especially in my hometown.
Great. I think a lot of people might think always associate you with Bradford, but you weren't born in Bradford, were you? You were born in Redcar, but you came to Bradford. How old were you when that happened?
Yeah. When I was born, I was a baby. I guess I was about 10 seconds at one time. I'm sorry about that.
No, go for it.
My family are Bradford people. Anyway, so I was born in Redcar, which was Yorkshire, but we moved back to Bradford when I was about four. And I went to school in Bradford then for a bit. My mum was always moving because they were in show business too, my mum and dad, and they were always going all over the country. When I was born, they left me with my grandma. I don't know, left me like get rid of him, but I was left with my grandma and granddad, and my auntie Peggy also lived there with her four kids. So I and my mum's younger brother Michael. So there was Michael, Conn, Tricia, Tori, Tina, and me all living in my grandma's semi in Redcar.
Wow.
And my mum was off doing and my dad doing shows and pantomimes and summer seasons and everything. And then when I was four, we moved back to Bradford. But because she'd got the moving bug, which she's always had, we didn't stay in Bradford that long. We stayed for about 2 years, and then we moved to Luton, which then Kimpton, then Nottingham. Then we moved all over the place. I went to 9 schools before I left. So I moved back to Bradford permanently when I was 11.
Okay.
But I was backwards and forwards before that. But 11, so I went to St. Bede's and stayed there right through. And all my formative years were in, all my teenage years were in Bradford until I moved to the Isle of Man, which was not until the 80s. So,
you've been about.
I consider myself a Bradford lad, in other words.
But the joy of living in so many places, I guess, as well, is wherever you play in the UK, you can go on stage and say, oh, it's great to be home.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it's true, you know.
And the thing is, that's the funny thing, when I'm doing interviews with especially with, say, like Teesside or anything like that, they go, and you're a Redcar lad. And I've said, of course, yes, well, I am. I was born here. But I don't consider myself that. I consider myself Bradford because I would, you know, this is where I spent most of my life, really.
Sure. Now, we'll talk more about your tour and your album and what people can expect from that in just a moment or two's time. But if I don't ask you about your time with Smokey, I'll never be forgiven. Right. Okay. So you're at St. George's Hall in Bradford on the 11th of May. You're playing a city, of course, as you say, there was your home and what you regard as home. I bet you can't wait to get on stage at St. George's Hall, the newly refurbished hall as well.
Well, everybody keeps telling me that who've been in, oh, it's lovely in there now. It's really smashing. You love it in there. So I'm looking forward to that. I played the last time in St. George's Hall. I was doing a tour with Dennis LeCourier from Dr. Hook,
yeah.
And I think that was 2007. So that's the last time I played there. So it'll be a lot different from that. And it wasn't my show then either. So this is my show. It's a different thing. So yeah, I can't wait to get on stage. I've got like a 5-piece band plus me. There's 6 of us. The guys have been with me for years. I mean, Jeff, the guitar player, Jeff Carline's been with me since 91.
Wow,
so,
okay.
You know, that's a long time, 28 years. And nearly all the band have been with me between 15 and 20 years. So we're all good friends. And that makes a big difference for me because being used to being in a band all my life with Smokey and that, when I first left, it was kind of a bit disconcerting. I was, you know, being on my, oh God, I'm on my own now, you know. But when I, once I got a band and people I knew, it's kind of like the best of both worlds now, because I'm in a band, but nobody argues with me anymore.
And the people who come to see you, Chris, are they new fans? Are they Smokey fans? Is it Smokey fans from back in the day with their children? Is it a cross section?
Yes, yeah, it's a mixture. I mean, I would say probably the main group of people are probably the older fans that are coming to see and listen to Smokey stuff. But I mean, I can't tell exactly what's going to happen in the UK or here, because in Bradford itself, because I haven't done it for a long time, you know. But I can go by what happens in other countries. I mean, I'm always on tour with the band in Germany, in Russia, in Scandinavia, in everywhere, you know. And
these are more places you can call home now as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like some of those places are at home, you know, because I know them so well. Even Moscow. I mean, I didn't play Moscow till the 90s the first time. But I was invited then to play at the Kremlin Palace Theatre. And I thought, well, why would they want me? Because we didn't know, you know, that people knew us. And I got on stage and everybody knew every song, every word. It was unbelievable. And I've been there many times since, not just Moscow, but all over Russia.
And that would have sold out twice, I understand, that gig, wouldn't
it? Yeah. And so everywhere was sold out. And, you know, when I do these tours and places like that, it's fantastic, you know. But normally it's like, to answer your question, it's normally kind of people who are probably teenagers or maybe a bit younger when the Smokey records were out. They're the mainstay.
The ones who had the posters on the wall and their school books and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, you know, women of a certain age, because I'm getting on, you know, so. But also there's a lot of younger women too, and guys and young people, because they've grown, and especially in Europe, you know, because I had this success starting in the 80s I had a big number one hit there called Midnight Lady, which was number one for 6 weeks in Germany, and then spread all over Europe and other countries. So there's a certain audience that grew up with that too. So they're a mixture, and there's a lot of people in the 20s and stuff come and see me as well. But what, I don't care, you know, as long as people come and see me and they like, and I do a lot of the Smokey songs in the set. It's not as if I'm going on and saying, oh, forget that, this is what I do now. I probably about 9 or 10 songs from the Smokey hits.
And why shouldn't you, as you say?
Yeah, because I feel like they belong to my heritage, you know, and I do a few of other things as well. I mean, like when I go and see, I've been to see Paul McCartney a couple of times. If he doesn't do the Beatles stuff, I'm really disappointed, you know, because I like Paul McCartney's solo stuff, but I started liking him when he was in the Beatles. So I kind of base it on that. I think, well, if he does it, I should. So I usually start off with a fairly rocky track from something new from me. And then before it get any further, I go straight in to do like 3 Smokey songs in a row. Then I'll go back to me. Then I'll do something like Stumbling In, which is kind of from that era, but it was a duet with Susie Quattro. And then we do an acoustic bit in the middle with all the like things like If You Think You Know, A Loving Mexican Girl, Living Next Door to Alice, all acoustic songs. And then we start rocking it as it goes on. And by the end, it's a real rock and roll show, you know. So, but a lot of Smokey stuff, because that's the audience really. The mainstay of coming to see that, I think.
And I think if you didn't do Living Next Door to Alice, you'd be lynched, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah.
Smokey formed, you got together at school, didn't you, to form Smokey? And your first gig was Berkenshaw School?
Is that right? Yes, probably. Yes, it was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got, I think we got half a crown each for that, which was... 10 shillings for the group.
Wow.
We played because we wanted to play. We'd have played for nothing, you know. Well, we did, because it cost us more than that to get there.
Yeah.
But it was a buzz, you know. I mean, this was when we were about 15 years old, 1965-ish. And the reason we played there was because the drummer at the time, Ron Kelly, he went to that school and he got us the gig. It was like a school dance. And we went on and played Scared to Death. And we went down a storm. We hardly had any equipment or anything. But we went down a storm. It was fantastic. And we were just thrilled. I didn't care about the fact we didn't get paid hardly.
No, it was
just
experience.
We were just thrilled, you know. And so then from then on, we wanted to get better and better so we could play more.
Great stuff. And pardon the pun, that Smokey were a bit of a slow burner in one respect. There were a lot of name changes.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then...
got some really stupid names.
What did you have?
Oh, God. The first name was The Yen.
Oh, wow.
Which was why we thought the yen. I think because we thought, oh, that's clever. It's a Japanese currency and it also means the yearning sort of
all
thing.
Right.
So we thought, oh, that's clever. Oh, aren't we clever?
Who's got an old pot?
Yeah. And nobody remembered it. And then we were called Longside Down, which was during the sort of 66, 67 when the hippie thing was going, because we could put LSD like and big letters Longside Down on the bass drum. We thought that'll make us look cool.
Yeah.
Although if we'd have seen anything like that drug wise, we'd have run a mile probably at that age. And then we Elizabethans, we were called when we started the clubs in Bradford. We were called Elizabethans. We got a bit of a following as the Elizabethans, actually. And then we changed it to Kindness because of the peace movement thing.
Okay.
And again, nobody could remember it. They used to call us, what do you call us? Kindness, all right. There, ladies and gentlemen, the calendars. No. You know, or they'd say, what is it? We'd say Kindness. And they'd say, on stage now is Happiness.
Oh.
You know, so we got...
We got all Ken Dodd.
Yeah, we got there. Happiness. Yeah. So Happiness.
So
we got that all the time. And then we changed the name to Smokey just about the time when we signed to Rack Records in 1974.
With Mickey Most.
With Mickey Most, yeah.
Okay. And was it always the intention to have a career in music, or was it, I've got the bug for this now, I want to do that, or is it, we'll just see how it goes?
When I was a kid, I never intended to go, because my parents were in show business, and I never intended to go that direction, because, you know, if I didn't fancy it, you know. I mean, I knew about show business because I was surrounded by it, really. But I didn't want to go in that direction. I remember my dad saying, I'll show you how to tap dance. And I went, no, I don't want to know how to tap dance. Because he was a great tap dancer. But I just didn't want to go that way, you know. So it was only the group thing and the rock and roll that started to change my mind. But even then, I might have stood in front of the mirror like millions of other kids with a tennis racket and pretended, you know. But I never thought that I would do it, you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
it was the 60s, really.
Okay.
The Beatles and all that, Stones, the Animals, all those Merseyside things, the beat thing, you know, that came up. That was what it was. Everybody at school was, you know, growing their hair long and starting groups. And me and Alan Silson, who was the guitar player for Smokey, that's what we did. And we started to meet up and play guitar together. We both got guitar that year, 64. And we just said, should we meet up? I know this new chord. And it was just like that. And that grew into the fact that we could sing together, which was lucky chance.
Always good harmonies as well, Chris.
Yeah, it was lucky chance. You know, Alan had a good voice and my voice was all right. And we both of us, between us, we could make this sound. So we'd start off, me and him, and we'd play like Everly Brothers stuff and awesome Beatles stuff. And it sounded good, you know. And then a bit later on, Terry Utley joined, who was also at school with us, but he wasn't in the group straight away. And then we had a different drummer then called Ron Kelly. And then later on, Pete Spencer, who we'd known because of, you know, we'd seen him around and that, the agency. And then he joined us full time in 73. He'd stood in with us once in 68, and then he joined us full time in 73. And that was the band, you know.
Sure. And before all the hits, I mean, were you releasing songs before you got signed up with Rack Records? I just wondered if there was a point where you thought, you know what, we'll give this, if this song doesn't take us anywhere, I'll get a proper job, we'll do the, I don't know, the Fat Pot Club at Great Orton on a Saturday night, we'll carry on doing that stuff, but unless the hits start coming, I'm going to have to pack it in. Did you ever go through that?
We thought a lot of times about, you know, we're not getting anywhere, you know. And, we had like, I think, three or four singles out as Kindness, which all missed completely. They were just flops. So, you know, you do, but we always had something new coming up, you know, like we were thinking, what we're going to do next. And then we got our first break to be on radio. So we were doing like Radio 1 Club, as it was then.
Was that like for you then at that point?
Well, it was like, this is it, we're on our way, you know, this is stardom coming. Because you do live radio, then you'd get everybody you knew to listen to it, and you'd hear yourself on radio, you know, record it and then listen to it. We're on the radio. And then we'd do sessions for different people's shows on Radio 1 then, you know, so you do like five songs and then they put on play one a day for a week. So we thought that was going to do something, but it didn't really. It didn't make any difference, you know, except for the fact it got us heard by a record label who signed us, and we put out a record, but the record flopped, so that didn't do anything. And okay. We were signed to three different record labels.
Wow.
All the records flopped, and the name was... Oh, then we backed Peter Noon, who was Peter Noon and Herman's Hermits, mm-hmm. you know. He left Herman's Hermits and had a song, solo hit, which was a Bowie song, Oh, You Pretty Things. Mm-hmm. He had that as a hit. And he was looking for a band, and we auditioned, got the job, so we were his backing band. And he used to say, oh, we'll, when we get the next song out, I'll take you on Top of the Pops. We thought, we're going to be on Top of the Pops. Mm-hmm. He never did. And that lasted about a year and a bit, and he wasn't working that often anyway, so we were still doing our own gigs in between. And we thought that was going to make us, you know, but it didn't. So, yeah, there was lots of times. And I think around about that, at the end of that, about 72-ish, I remember thinking, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know, and talking about maybe we should split up and forget about it and maybe get a job and then just do bits, and, like you say. Mm. But we didn't. We just got through that phase because something else came up. I can't remember what, and kept us going. Mm-hmm. Ah, we got a new manager. That was it.
Okay.
73, we got a manager called Bill Hurley.
Right.
Who came to see us and said, I've saw you about 2-3 years ago, but I wasn't in a position then to offer you anything. Now I'm with a big agency in London called Brian Longley Associates, and we'd like you to come with. And we went, oh, okay. And he says, and whatever you're earning now, within a month, I'll get you like three times that what you're getting now a night. And he did.
Wow.
And he says, and if you, how often are you working? We're saying, well, sometimes we'll be doing five shows a week, sometimes one, because we were, it was like that, yeah. You know. And he says, I'll get you five nights every week. And
wow.
He did. Within 2 weeks, he was ringing me up saying, you're at this place, you're at this place, you're at this place. And suddenly we were working. And then he started working on, he rang me up one day and said, I've got great news. I said, what? He says, you're out of your Decca record contract. And I went, who are we with now? He said, nobody. I went, what? That's great news. You know.
You weirdo.
Yeah. We want to be a recording band. You know, yeah. That sort of sets us apart from everybody else. He said, that's not a recording contract you've got there. Nothing's happening. I'll get you a better one than that. And he did. He got us signed up to Mickey Most label,
Rack Records.
And that was what changed it. So he was the one that kind of took us from... nearly to get in there.
Yeah,
you know?
He got the momentum going, and then you were with the Rack Records as well. And when you, and then the hits were coming, so there's Living Next Door to Alice and there's O'Carroll and stuff. When you hear those songs on the radio, because it's always the test of a good song that it's still getting played on the radio and that you get a new audience to it as well. So people are fresh to it, but there's people who remember it first time around. When you hear that song on the radio, do you remember recording it in the recording studio? Is that what takes you back?
Yeah.
Is it?
Absolutely. Every record. Every single record that we recorded, that not just the singles, but every album track and everything, I can exactly place what year it was, where we recorded it, how it felt, how we did it, how this went wrong or that went wrong, how we tried it this way and tried it that way. And yeah, I mean, for every, It's Your Life is a good example, because It's Your Life's got like a reggae feel. It's not like out and out proper reggae, but it's got this jank, 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 jank. It's got this reggae feel. And when we were in the studio, we took that song. I think we tried it in all kinds of ways to do. We were going to do it straight, you know, just sort of straight strumming like a Alice type song or something. And it just didn't work. And we ended up messing about doing like about recording like five backing tracks, like in Elvis.
In different styles and stuff.
Like an Elvis version and all kinds of stuff.
It's interesting how things work. I think Blondie, was it Heart of Glass started as a reggae song? And then they put a disco beat behind it and it became a hit.
I didn't know.
But I'm
that.
Pretty sure Heart of Glass was
I didn't know that. Because that was Mike Chapman produced that, who produced us too. He was the same producer. So
really?
We knew all about that was going on, because that he started working with Blondie the same time he was still working with us.
Right.
And Debbie Harry was a huge Donna Summer fan, and she loved that. What was the big disco hit? And then
I Feel Love.
I'm trying to do this.
Feel Free.
The synthesizer bit to remind myself what it was. Yeah, I Feel. She was a huge fan of that. So I think... probably that's where they got the inspiration to do that, you know.
Wow. And you sell the records all over the UK, but all over the world, as we've alluded to before, and you're selling records in Korea and Eastern Europe and stuff like that. And first foreign band to have a million-selling album in Korea? I understand.
Well, so they tell me. I mean, you never know whether these things are true or not.
Well, it must be, because I read it online, so it must be true.
Of course. Well, I'll take it if it's there.
And has being in a very successful band helped you as a solo artist?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no way I would have ever got the offer to do the solo stuff that I did and started to do in the 80s if it wasn't for the fact that Smokey had so many hits, you know. Because the offer that I got for this, the first one, came from Germany, because it was a song which was part of a TV movie called Midnight Lady. The song had already been written, and they didn't have anybody to record it yet. And they asked me, because the producer was a huge Smokey fan, and he wanted my voice for this thing. And actually, that story is that I went for a meeting, because it was a publishing company, our publishing company in Germany, who had the rights to the song and this TV movie. And I wrote him a letter. I said, we're going to be on tour in Germany, and we'd like to come in and say hi, and blah, blah, blah. And so we did, and went in to say hi. And while we were there, this producer, they rang him up, and he came round and, whoa, Smokey, you want to meet you, and all that, because he was a fan. And about a week after I got back home, I got a phone call and said, the guy's name was Dieter Bohlen. He had he was a famous producer, and he still does all right. He's like, now he does that X Factor thing.
Oh, does he? Oh, right.
Germany.
Okay.
Germany.
Right,
he's like the Simon Cowell of, you know. So I got a call and said, would you do this song for this movie? It's called Midnight Lady. And I said, yeah, sure, send me it and I'll have a listen. He said, no, but the thing is, it has to be finished by Tuesday. This was like Thursday, the week before. And I said, oh. So if you want to do it, you just have to come and take our word for it and come. And I said to my wife, I said, what do you think? She's like, oh, what? You know, maybe it's rubbish. And I go all the way and it's crap, you know. And
Midnight Lady.
Yeah, it could have been anything, you know. So I thought, well, you know, might as well. And got on a plane, got off the plane in Hamburg. Somebody met me from the record company and gave me a cassette, in those days, 86. And I went to my hotel, and put it on my little Walkman thing and listened to it for a couple of hours before I went to sleep. And the next day, I got up at 11 o'clock, went in the studio, sang it, because they'd already got like a backtrack for it. took about 20 minutes to go actually arrive, meet the producer. Hi, I'm Chris. Hi, how are you doing? Come on. Mic set up, run through. And then they said, we'll do another run through. I did another run through. I said, thanks a lot. And I said, right, we're going to do it. They said, we just did it. I said, okay.
Wow.
And I went, and by the time I'd got out of the studio, they'd sent a tape of it to the office of the record company, and I went round, and they'd got like champagne. Oh, there's, and I walk in.
That's champagne.
They're playing it in the room. I don't just finish singing it, you know.
Oh, wow.
They biked it over there before I got there. And then I went back to Smokey, did some more gigs, and the record came out, went to number one with this movie, you know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's... if it hadn't have been for Smokey, I wouldn't have been asked to do that. And if I hadn't have had the Smokey experience, I wouldn't have known how to do it.
Yeah, sure.
So, of course, one thing is, you know, it's a ladder. You know, when you start, you're a kid.
Yes.
And it's just goes from playing in clubs to getting better and better, practicing more.
And building experience all the way up.
Building all the way up, getting all your experiences. And the same with that,
Terrific. Chris, what an absolute pleasure to sit and chat. I could chat with you all day about stuff like this. So thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure for me too. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.